Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, in recent months, there has been increased focus on immigration, right, both here and right across Europe and beyond. But what about the conflicts which are driving the rise in people who are seeking international protection? Well, for the past year, civil war has been raging in Sudan, with new research showing that sexual violence and the repeated burning of villages are common tactics in that war. Well, for more on this, I'm joined by Sky News Africa correspondent Yusra El Bagir and by lecturer in international relations at DCU, Dr. Walt Kilroy. And thank you both for being with us. Yusra, I'm going to start with you. You've been reporting on some of the scorched earth tactics being used in this conflict. Explain that to us.
So we partnered up with the Center for Information Resilience, whose investigators have been looking at the systematic burning of settlements, villages, towns, cities across Sudan for the last year. And they've managed to compile very shocking data, which is that 180 separate fires have happened since the start of the war in April 15th, 2023, last year. And 108 settlements, villages, towns, cities have been burnt. They found that most of these fires are conflict related, some of them happening in IDP camps where displaced people have found refuge, causing them to flee for a second time, for a third time. And our journalists at Sky News, our data and forensics journalists, found that over a quarter, 28% of the villages and towns and cities and places where people gather had been targeted more than once. Mm-hmm. So we have been looking at that in light of the reporting that we've been doing over the last year. When we were in on the border of Sudan and Chad in late May last year, we saw these villages being burnt. We saw people fleeing from gunfire from Darfur into Chad for safety. We saw the wounded pouring in from gunshot wounds, a child as young as 3 years old shot in the hip. And it was horrifying, but it was actually quite a shocking moment of deja vu, because this is what we have been told and have seen happen in Darfur in the early 2000s in the conflict that was categorized as a genocide by the US administration at the time. And I think the question is, why is this happening again? How has this been allowed to happen again? And what intervention would have been required to prevent this escalation? And I think international mediation failed massively following the 2019 revolution that was nationwide across Sudan, people protesting, calling for democracy, calling for civilian rule. And we watched the international community, diplomats from Europe, from the US, legitimize the generals who were touting themselves as leading the transition to democracy and are now at war. So I think there's a lot to answer for, especially as this now becomes the largest displacement crisis in the world. 8.4 million people have been forced out of their homes by this war alone. The numbers could be much more. And then we see the shock, horror, disbelief when those people who've been forced out, whose homes have been burnt, who've experienced looting, pillaging from a militia whose commander, whose general, was shaking hands with envoys and ambassadors from across the West. Then we deal with the anti-migrant sentiments when we don't actually deal with the root causes of this conflict, and we don't call things out for what they are.
Yusra, we'll come back to the root causes and the lead up to all of this in a moment. But I want to bring Dr. Walt Kilroy, who's here in the studio with me, in at this point. You say what we're seeing in this region now is unprecedented. Why?
Yeah, I know that I don't want to depress people. We all hear a lot of incredibly disturbing news from Ukraine, from Gaza. But it's really important that we don't ignore what's happening here. As Yusra says, and her reporting and that research work showing that what's happening is a pattern. It's not just some random looting. It's really important that we pay attention to this. As Yusra says, this is the largest internal displacement that we see in the world today. Obviously in Gaza, it's much more intense. It's a much higher proportion of the population that is displaced, almost 90%. But that's about 2 million people. Sudan is a huge country. It's about 20 times the size of Ireland, with a population of almost 50 million people. So in terms of the numbers of people, and I'm not saying people should pay less attention to other conflicts, in terms of the numbers that are affected, both in terms of displacement and in terms of food security, similar to Gaza, what we're looking at is a famine in the making, and it is going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. And Yusra, to bring you back so that we can tell people what is happening and why, the outbreak of violence last April, what led up to that point?
It was a power struggle that was simmering behind the scenes that followed the 2019 revolution, where the 30-year dictator Omar al-Bashir was ousted by mass protests across the country, but ousted in a palace coup, a military coup, responding to the discontent and the protests that refused to kind of disappear. People consistently and persisted in their calls for him to step down. The two generals that were actually very close allies of Omar al-Bashir, one Abdel Fattah Burhan, who is now the head of the armed forces, was his inspector general during some of the most atrocious massacres in Darfur that the country has ever seen. And the second man was General Himiti, who's the head of the RSF militia, who I mentioned earlier, have carried out many of these scorched earth tactics, who is the commander of what was once known as the Janjaweed militia in the early 2000s during the Darfur conflict. These two men managed to create a transitional council off the back of these protests. The head of the armed forces, became the president, the de facto head of state, and the RSF commander Himiti became the de facto VP. Now, they had their own issues, but they kind of shared a common interest in derailing the transition to civilian rule. Every time it came close to them handing over power to civilian politicians, something would happen. In October 25th, 2021, they actually led a coup, a military coup that derailed the transitional process. And then once again, as we were about to near a point of them handing over power in a sort of, it was a written agreement that they had shown positive kind of response to, that they would hand over power, then their fight behind the scenes becomes everyone's problem. Mm-hmm. So really, I think it's two generals who've worked side by side as security partners over decades during some of the most bloody periods of our history, now vying for power and for kind of complete totalitarian control that al-Bashir had.
Yes,
their former boss.
Walt, back in 2011, then South Sudan became independent. So how has that played into what we're seeing now?
Yeah, South Sudan struggled for decades to become independent from Sudan, and it achieved statehood in July 2011. That was that was very much supported by the international community. They were immediately admitted to the UN and the African Union. There was a lot of hope. Sadly, it's also had its own problems and fell into its own civil war. But what's happened is that South Sudan is one of the countries that is now receiving some of the millions of refugees. We talk about migration. In fact, the vast majority of refugees, they stay in the region. They're accommodated often very generously by neighbouring countries who may themselves be very poor. So South Sudan has had to take in about 500,000 refugees, and it's really not in good shape to accommodate those. So the situation in the neighbouring countries, South Sudan to the south, Chad to the west, is really extreme. And I know there are a lot of Irish agencies that are doing great work there. They've been doing long-term development work as well as the immediate relief, the humanitarian relief. But I mean, it's again to contrast with Gaza. With Gaza, we know the aid is there. It's queuing up at the border and it's not being allowed in. The situation here is that, as well as the conflict situation making it very, very hard and dangerous to move aid in, the international community hasn't stepped up in terms of funding. The appeal was put together for the needs for this year, with more than half of the population going to be dependent on food aid. Only 5% of the funds have been committed. I don't mean paid, but even committed. Only 5%.
Mm-hmm. And is that because of the other issues that are happening right now, in particular the war in Ukraine?
Yeah, it's understandable. Like, I always say that this shouldn't be a zero-sum game. You know, it's a bit like, you know, empathy or rights. There isn't kind of necessarily a fixed amount. But in reality, attention has been taken, understandably, by Ukraine and by Gaza. And it's simply not on the radar. There have been talks, as Yusra said, which were hosted by Saudi Arabia and by with US backing, and the African Union has been on the sidelines. But really, it hasn't been on anybody's radar. And it's extremely difficult as a journalist to get into Sudan.
And Yusra, your own family have been caught up in this, in and around Khartoum, where displacement has happened.
Yeah, I mean, my parents were trapped. My family home is in Khartoum. I was born in Khartoum and my parents lived there. They almost kind of refused to leave. Though we could see the situation deteriorating, they were very adamant about staying. And we spent the first 2 weeks, me and my family and my friends, and sort of everyone was corralling to convince them to leave as airstrikes and shelling was happening all around them. And I think it's very important for people to understand that people don't want to leave their homes. A lot of people that we see crossing the Mediterranean, passing through Libya, which is one of the most dangerous migrant routes in the world. People are held in detention centers and tortured. These aren't people that, you know, just decide on a Sunday that they want to just head to Europe for a fun time. It's usually very desperate circumstances, whether it's economic or it's, in this case, political, extreme political violence, mm-hmm. that forces people to make these journeys. And I think, you know, speaking to what Dr. Walt said, I think that there is a complete lack of empathy when we look at conflicts on the African continent. There's almost an expectation or a complete blank that people are in, you know, that people don't deserve this, that we're kind of resigned to our own fate of violence and squalor. And that's simply not true.
All right,
these countries like Sudan, sorry, I'll just finish my point. These countries like Sudan, like Palestinian territories, like places like Gaza's are this is home for millions of people. And I think we need to start looking at it with the same empathy that we look at Ukraine or conflicts that feel much closer to us in Europe.
Well, Yusra, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. We'd love to have you back again. That's Yusra El Bagir, who's Africa correspondent with Sky News, and Dr. Wal Kilroy, who joined me here in the studio from DCU. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.